Welcome to the Bureau Briefing, a podcast by the Bureau of Digital, an organization devoted to giving digital professionals the support system they never had. Each episode, we're going to talk to a member of our community doing awesome, inspiring things. Now for your host, Carl Smith.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to the Bureau Briefing. You know who I am. I say it every time, unless this is the first time you're listening, in which case, hi, I'm Carl. And I'm excited today because I have a very good friend of mine, Mr. Joe Rinaldi, on the show today. How's it going, Joe?
Hi, Carl. It's going great. How are you doing?
I'm good. And we're already going to get the giggles before we get going.
Yeah, I'm afraid so.
Now, Joe, I know I met you before 2012, but 2012 is what stands out. It was at the very first owner camp known as Shop Talk at the time. And you were just hilarious. It's changed, but... No, it was you're personable, you're this nice guy, you work at Happy Cog, you know, all these things going on. You are travel sized. Mm-hmm. Well, you were. Mm-hmm. I don't know anymore. And none of us are. But the thing I remember the most, you just seemed to know stuff. Mm. It never seemed like it was gonna happen. And then you would sit back and you would go, well, what about this? And then some sort of gold nuggets would flow forth. And this, I know, I'm going to ask you for money in a minute.
Fair enough.
But no, but what was amazing was this became kind of how you were introduced to the Bureau community. You became known as the biz dev person that everybody wished they had. And we just had to go find recruiters that weren't dicks. And as soon as we realized that well was dry, you know, we met you. So anyway, today on the show, I was really hoping we could talk about business development at digital agencies. I had an article out lately that it didn't catch me as much grief as I thought, but it just basically said digital agencies suck at biz dev. So I'm going to let you talk now. You're the guest. But why do you think we struggle so much as digital agencies with finding work?
Sure. I think in now partnering with 20 or so digital agencies in consulting. So now that I've moved on from Happy Cog, I'm consulting in business development with digital shops through my handle is now Clutch. So I've had an opportunity really to peek over the hedge and learn a little bit about how people's business development practices have evolved over time, learn more of the story of how folks got started. And I have, you know, half-baked notions for why I think this is. I don't know that I would consider any of them kind of scientifically valid based on sample size. but you know, my suspicion that's been kind of proven a couple of times with folks that I've worked with in particular is that especially the people that I'm fortunate enough to work with who tend to come from that kind of bureau community, those people... Those owners, they kind of live in a swim lane within a swim lane of the industry. So there's, you know, there's a lot
that's
of,
fair.
Yeah, there's a lot of work that happens. And then there's a lot of different, you know, size shops and different kinds of shops. And then within that, there's the bureau community. And then even within that, there are the people that I got to know early in the baby, you know, steps of the bureau who I've worked with more and more, who tend to be founders and owners and biz dev folks that have a lot in common just based on their shared background or when they started and founded their shops. So, you know, within that sample size, you know, I think that in many cases, folks were just really fortunate starting out that they were the beneficiaries of an unquenchable demand and really short supply. So, you know, when the industry really took off, and I would say, in my understanding of this is probably, you know, post.net crash, you know, so this is like that second wave of agencies that start in the mid 2000s, as opposed to the folks that started off really at the, you know, the vanguard like Zeldman did in like 99. But the people that started kind of mid 2000, 2005, 2006, I think were really, you know, really appreciative as well that they were able to ride a wave of demand, and they were able to build their business in a very specific, idiosyncratic way. And a lot of times what that looked like was agencies being very discriminating about what clients they would work with, agencies kind of requiring that clients work with them in a project by project basis, and really like picking up a project, executing it, putting it down, taking the medicine show over the hill to the next town, doing it over again, finishing, moving on. And it was, I think, a way of thinking that was built towards just surviving the demand that people had to, you know, go through. There was a lot of inbound leads. There were a lot of relationships that generated referrals. When you blogged something, you were one of dozens of bloggers as opposed to hundreds or thousands of bloggers. So, you know, differentiating yourself in terms of sharing ideas was really powerful. So, you know, as a result, I think that agencies got really good at marketing, but they didn't get really good at sales. And it's just a muscle that got exercised less, and other muscles got exercised more. And then as the industry evolves and changes, and as clients' capabilities change, and as there's, you know, more and more competition, the overall kind of balance of things shifts. And it's just whether or not you're able to anticipate that change and start to adapt in advance and really ride a second wave, or if you have to react to the change and then you're kind of scrambling to figure things out and bolt things together, and it's a little bit more harried. But to me, that's where a lot of the I guess imprecision or the experimental nature of sales kind of has its roots in the early days of these founders' lives in a lot of cases.
That's amazingly insightful.
Well, thank you.
Engine started in 2003, and our first client was Chase.
Jesus, really?
Yeah. Somebody knew somebody. Yeah, they knew that we were doing stuff. And I mean, it took 3 months for that first client to come through the door.
Right.
But when they did, suddenly we had more work and more work. And you know, it's Aaron at Electric Pulp who said this to me probably in 2005. He said, once you get to 7 years, the flow shifts. Right now, you're out there, you're kind of looking, but once you do enough good work and you treat people fair, the leads will start coming in faster than you can look at them. Right. Now, Electric Pulp had Guy Kawasaki, and they had a lot of other people out there that were very pivotal to sending that work. But with Engine, we started seeing the same thing. And to your point, after the dot bomb, right, after the bust, it was like a lot of smaller people, I think, or smaller companies started to think, well, this is accessible now. Like before, it felt so big and you couldn't do it. But now it was like, oh, this replaces the Yellow Pages. And so the shops that existed, like Engine, I mean, we get 10, 15 leads a week.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And to your point, our business muscle, our new business muscle was much more about filtering out the leads for the one or two that we wanted.
Yes.
We never knew how to go out and look for it.
And it's an overwhelming amount of work to wade through that stuff too. I mean, it's not like, you know, you're just sitting back lighting cigars and waiting for projects to start. There's a lot of work involved in vetting clients and weeding through those inbound. I mean, it's a nice problem to have. Don't get me wrong. It's a great problem to have, but it's still an absolute, you know, operational commitment and a resource drain. And I think what people would wind up doing, and I don't know if you saw this with Engine, but, you know, I think I saw it at HappyCog, was you get to a point where there's enough of this kind of inbound that you have to hire someone to be business development and take that on as an unbillable total overhead kind of, you know, expense that comes with the territory. And I think, you know, some shops were even more reluctant to invest like that. More shops were, you know, the owner and principal really wanted to kind of keep their hands on that, or they didn't want to bring on someone that wasn't billable. And there's a lot of reluctance to really assign resourcing towards that kind of effort. And then eventually maybe that kicked in later. But I think by and large, most of the owners that I know even, I think, would be quick to admit that they probably hire for biz dev, whether that's sales or marketing or a combination of both. They probably hire for that position 6 months after the need, because they've been so far pushed over the edge that they can't ignore the need to bring in a resource and work on this anymore. And there are very, very, very few. I can think of one example in my mind of people that have invested like 6 months in advance of where they need business development to be in order to generate you know, increased results. It's like survival staffing as opposed to strategic kind of building a team and growing a capability to plot a course.
Right. And then that person who comes in when you're overloaded has no chance.
Oh, yeah.
Even if they're a great person, cultural fit, understand what you do, they're not going to have any time to get onboarded. They're going to get slammed.
Yeah.
Right. Or absolutely. It's going to be like, we've been paying this person for 4 months and nothing has changed except we had a false sense of security. And now it's even worse. The bringing them on ahead of time, I think, is great. But then, well, the whole thing is, if that person doesn't understand as an owner or as a former owner of a digital agency, if somebody didn't understand what we were about, what it was we sold, and that it was the experience of working with Engine, it was, there was a byproduct of it, which was the product. But why people hired us was because we would tell them no. Mm. Like, we would sit in front of a board of directors and say, that is stupid. Right? And people would hire us to be their hitmen, their marketing hitmen, you know?
Yeah.
And so if suddenly a new business person came in and brought us an elementary school, we would be like, well, we can totally do this work, but they're not going to pay us what everybody else has paid us. So I don't know.
I agree. And I think when business dev people are brought in, whether it's a salesperson that's closing or it's, you know, someone that's in charge of outbound or whatever, there's a huge amount of time it takes just to learn Engine stories and to learn, you know, the case studies and to learn the history and go native. Like, that takes time. And even if you're lucky enough that you have, you know, somebody that was president of the fan club and knew all that stuff coming in, which is kind of the way I was with HappyCog. Like, I had, you know, gotten to know that team over a long period of time. I'd done my homework. But even still, coming in, there's an amazing amount of just history you have to internalize in that role that takes a long time to soak in. And then on top of that, that person invariably is not able to spread their time really strategically across closing inbound leads, outbound biz dev, content marketing, social strategy, account management, partnerships, like all the things you can be doing in business development. That person's probably brought in as a lifeboat because you're swamped with inbound. So their day is taken up with, you know, vetting and closing. And then when that's slow, when there's like a 1 month lull in inbound, then we'll do some herky jerky outbound and fire off a bunch of emails and then get pissed when no one said like, oh, great, we have a project tomorrow. Like, so that's speaking from my experience. Like, it's just, there's a lot of work that can clutter up your agenda, and this stuff has to get done. And it's hard to then slice up your time strategically. Because the other thing that I think I've kind of been validated in this, in the people I've spoken with time and time again, is there's this, I love the idea, and I was so bought into this myself. And I'm the biggest advocate of this at one point. There's this desire to PM the sales process. You know, like, let's just get organized. Right. Let's try to set some goals. And I'm not saying up against goals, but I think what PMing the sales process implies to me is a lot. Like, when I think of a project manager is a partner to a client. They lead projects. They are not order receivers. They are order givers, and they are, you know, masters of their domain, and they make things happen and they negotiate timelines, and they have domain. And in biz dev, especially with responding to inbound or deadlines a client set, you just don't have that reliable week-to-week schedule or rapport with the client to a point where you're a partner yet, where you can actually quote unquote, you know, PM the biz dev process. You know, it's biz dev is gonna eat when it wants to eat, and it's going to crap when it wants to crap. It's like the Tyrannosaurus Rex in Jurassic Park. So, like, I think you can set big goals. Like, okay, this quarter. Like, okay, in this quarter, I want to make sure that we focus on outbound, you know, in this kind of campaign twice. You know, and these two campaigns, I want to make sure they occur sometime between January 1 and March, you know, and April 1. Sometime in that window, I want this to happen. But you can't say, like, every week I'm going to spend, you know, 20 hours in inbound and 5 hours in outbound and 5 hours in account management and five, like, your weeks are chaos. Like, I can't do that this week. I have to fly to Minnesota to pitch someone and lose 2 days to travel and be there for a day. I can't then get that time back to do outbound this week. So all that to say, I think it's a lot to orchestrate. There's a lot of options and opportunities you have at your disposal. And by and large, you know, agencies are committed to business development and sales to a point of, you know, just enough to handle their existing biz dev needs. It's hard. It's an incredible expense, and it's a huge leap of faith to get out in front of it and say, no, what we're going to do is, you know, we're going to add another marketing person or a biz dev person because we know our goal is to grow by, you know, 15% year to year. And that means X number of projects. That means X number of leads. That means, you know, that's another person in addition to our biz dev person to, you know, give us a chance to accomplish that. So like I said, it's not an easy decision. It is a luxury in a lot of cases to be able to behave that way. But I've seen how dangerous the opposite can be time and time again.
And in listening to you share that, I understand now why most digital agency owners or founders anyway, probably shut down that salesperson and possibly even the biz dev process that they're not involved with. Well, first of all, you do have imposter syndrome. They're worried that people are going to find out they don't know what they're doing and all that crap. Right.
Right. Right. Yeah.
But the bigger part is, like when I was running Engine, I hired people that could do the work that we had a history of doing that we could sell. Mm-hmm. And we knew that history and I knew those people. And when you mentioned it, like if people don't know the mythology of the mm-hmm. company, mm-hmm. they can't sit down and share it. They can't sit down and share, well, this is why we fired the Girl Scouts, right? They can't say, well, this is why we turned on that project with Microsoft. They can't set the tone because they're like, well, that's a horrible thing. I would never say that. I was like, actually, it levels the playing field.
Yeah.
And for us, that's a good thing. So my eyes are opening to the fact that as a founder, as an owner, if you are, or anybody, actually, hell, as anybody who's been at the company for a while, mm-hmm. you need to realize that when you bring in somebody to manage, if it's just sales, I think that's tough. Mm-hmm. But if it's a bigger biz dev effort, like helping people with marketing and sharing the work that's going on and helping create a culture where everybody is excited to share who the company is, you know, the company's going to change. And you have to be ready for that because they're going to bring in work that wants to come in, not necessarily the work that you want to have come in.
Yeah. At the same time, though, I think that's a really interesting point because I'm really interested in the idea of replenishing your network, of kind of continually restoring your stock of client contacts or industry contacts or people out there that become part of the web of connections you have. And I think that, you know, another element in why biz dev has become or grown into less of a set it and forget it, you know, reliable part of the business and maybe more of a challenge for some folks is I think as your career develops and you spend less time actively kind of cultivating your network, you know, your network kind of waxes and wanes over time. You know, it grows mm-hmm. when you're actively meeting people and making connections, and then it'll kind of contract when you're not kind of exercising that the same way. And I think you see sometimes, you know, principals in time can start to step a little bit back from the front lines, and they have operational concerns that demand that of them, and they have, you know, other priorities that start to get in the way. They tend to get older, they tend to have families, they tend to travel less and socialize less, and you know, what had been just a byproduct of being active and social maybe 5 years ago now is like a chore. It's a chore to go to, you know, whatever, refresh Pittsburgh and shake a bunch of hands and go to this kind of community event. So an owner's network kind of just shrinks a little bit over time, and your clients graduate out of a place where they can really help you or they change careers. And I love the idea of as you grow your team and you kind of reinvest your team, you can reinvigorate your network with the people you bring on. To your point though, it's incredibly helpful to make sure that the network that they kind of sweep in with represents the kind of clients you want to work with. They you know, feel analogous to the kind of projects that you're really excited about. But I think when you can strategically pull that off and you can kind of, you know, amplify your agency or your team's network with your team members, I think that's a really underutilized way to nurture that network. I think, you know, always hire for fit first, hire for capability. Those are the most important things to look for. But, you know, if you have two candidates and one was a product designer at Evernote for 4 years and brings with her, you know, a massive network of designers that now work in different product companies and et cetera, I would absolutely hire that person over, you know, someone who's equally skilled, who maybe comes from, you know, a less dynamic background and doesn't bring that network with them.
You know, what's interesting when you're talking about the network and the way, I don't know that I ever thought that way. I think it's absolutely right. But I always thought we were doing stuff in front of people. I never thought of it as these are the people that we know. And we need to make sure we keep finding new people and we need to do all that. You know, it was interesting. Remember, and this was in the late 90s, all the way through probably 2006, 2007, it started to fall out of favor. Mm-hmm. But we used to tag sites. Remember, you'd put at the bottom of the site, powered by engine.
Yep.
All that kind of stuff. And then suddenly it became not professional to do that.
Right. That became like what a small shop would do or what like a schlocky kind of shop would do.
So we got 40% of our leads from those things.
From that breadcrumb trail. Yeah.
And you know, it's starting to come back.
I think, you know, in talking to one of my clients recently, you know, they were quick to identify that, you know, a lot of their inbound is triggered by one exact client and the impression that client and that work has made. You know, they field inquiries where people say, you know, I know you did this work for so-and-so, you know, we want to talk to you. And I think, you know, HappyCog had that with Zappos and Tien and Lax had that with Medium and MetaLab had that with Slack. Like there can be, you know, just a signature project that gets so much attention that, you know, a Webby or something like that will connect the dots. But a lot of times, you know, one single project, one single brand isn't pervasive enough that you can like Google who redesigned Zappos and find out.
Right.
It's, you know, if you looked at a site that was a lesser known brand that didn't have so much buzz around the redesign, then the only way you'd be able oftentimes to discern who did what is if, you know, there was like a link in the footer or some kind of tag there that would, you know, kind of breadcrumb you back, or, you know, I guess, you know, case studies on the agency site, things like that would be another opportunity for that. But yeah, the best biz dev by, you know, nothing replaces good work in business development, period. That's the best biz dev. Good work is the best business development. That it's just like time and time again, it's such an old axiom, but it's so awfully true that, you know, that is the most important element in business development. But if you're not connecting the dots to let people know who did that good work, then it's going to wither and die. You know, you have to market it and promote it. You have to occasionally win awards. You have to write and speak about it. You have to draw attention to your good work. You don't want to be the person, you know, trying real hard in the corner, hoping people notice and not, you know, don't be that person in the rom-com who's like, you know, I hope they like me. Like you have to really lean into it and you have to market and you have to be intentional and you have to, you know, make sure that those stories are told. They're told the right way. They're told to the right people. They, you know, lead back to you in a variety of ways. Like it's you know, that's what marketing is. But I think it's critically important more and more to facilitate that because there's just so much noise out there. It doesn't happen as seamlessly or as easily as it might have at one point.
Well, and I think that becomes one of the issues that a lot of shops have is the consistency of sharing what they're doing. And content marketing is just two words that were put together that maybe I don't understand what it is, but it sounds like what we've been doing forever.
Yeah, absolutely. Right? I think the guys at Chromatic say this really well. They say, you know, go be smart in public. Like that's what it is. Yeah. That's what it is. It's now, is that a blog post? Is it a podcast? Is it, you know,
giving a talk,
speaking, whatever, like all of that is exactly that. It's be smart in public, you know, go have a chance to make that kind of impression. And it is, it's a very tried and true and, you know, very kind of battle tested approach that everyone under the sun, for the most part, has invested time and effort in over the past, you know, 10 years in some way, shape or form.
Yeah. Joe, thanks so much for being on the show today. And congratulations on all the success with Clutch. I hate to tell you this, but I hear really good things.
Thanks, Carl. I appreciate the begrudging support.
You're welcome. And we're going to get to hang out this September at BizDev Camp, the first ever BizDev Camp, which is crazy popular. We all want the answers, so we're going to sit down and try to figure them out together. So I look forward to seeing you there. And for everybody listening, you can find Joe at thatwasclutch.com. I think that's correct, isn't it?
Yes, sir.
All right. And we'll talk to everybody soon. And be consistent in your BizDev efforts. That's why it's not working, people.